A few years back, my friend Justin Warner from Food Network moved out to South Dakota. He opened a ramen joint, and he is always posting pictures of all the great food he's not only cooking, but eating all over South Dakota. He's always telling me to come visit. And you know, one of the best ways to experience a new place is to eat your way through it. But it's equally important to live your way through it, too. And when you summer in South Dakota, you can fill up on all the lake days, hikes, rides, and small-town strolls that'll leave you with a regained sense of wonder and a hunger to do it all over again. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com. This episode contains explicit language, but if you're familiar with my guests, you probably already knew that. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. And today on the show, we're opening the phone lines, taking calls from folks like you, from a couple of Sporkful listeners with food-related disputes. We're going to dig into the dynamics at play and try to bring resolution. I'm not doing it alone, though. Here to help me today are two people who are perfect for a call-in show because they are well-known for having opinions on just about everything. They are the co-hosts of the podcast The Distraction and two of the co-founders of the website Defector, where they share their opinions on sports, culture, food, and just about anything else that anyone could rant about. First up, we have Drew McGarry, who's also a correspondent for SF Gate, the author of three novels, and most important for our purposes, a one-time champion of Chopped. Welcome, Drew. It is an honor to be in the presence of a Chopped champion.
It should be an honor for you. You should consider yourself very, very fortunate.
And originally hailing from the great state of New Jersey, my home state as well, he's written for outlets as wide-ranging as Deadspin, The New Republic, and Food and Wine. As if that didn't make him versatile enough, he hosts a Hallmark Channel podcast. This guy does it all. Welcome, David Roth.
How are you? Thanks for not saying author of zero novels. That is correct. But this is a way nicer way of describing what I've accomplished to date.
Yeah. And is it okay if I call you Roth, as Drew does
yeah,
on your
man,
podcast?
Of course.
Okay. I mean, I'm very excited to have both of you on. I love both of your work. Drew, I feel like you and I are really kindred spirits. We're both people who have very strong opinions about very meaningless things.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, just as one example, you recently wrote a piece on Defector that is right up my alley, all about your love of hoisin sauce.
Yes.
I really connected with this piece because you talked about falling in love with mushu pork, which was like my first favorite food.
Yes.
Like, I remember being in Temple and the cantor of my temple asked me, "What's your favorite food?" And I said, "Mushu pork." And she kind of grimaced and said, "I prefer mushu chicken." And my parents had their hands in their head like, "Oh, God."
I and your vengeful Old Testament God both prefer mushu chicken.
But tell me about your love affair with mushu pork and hoisin sauce.
I just remember, like you said, it was one of the first, like so I'm 44. So when I was growing up, my parents, because my dad, he did not do a lot of international travel for his work. So he was more familiar with Chinese cuisine. And I was like, I had dumplings for the first time. I was like, holy shit, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. And then we had mushu pork where they prepared it tableside, like it was Peking duck. Like they take the spoon and the fork and they handle everything, including the pancake, with the big spoon and the big fork. They never touch it.
Right.
And they give that, they have like a I can't even describe it. It looks like a cake stand. It's that shallow, but it has a pool, like a cistern of hoisin sauce. And they ladle that around. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but it looks good. And I tasted it and I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. My parents called it duck sauce. They thought it was duck sauce, which is a totally different sauce. So every time, like for the next decade, every time I got like duck sauce and asked for it, I would get duck sauce. And I was like, this is shit. This isn't duck sauce. And I was totally wrong about it.
Those were the 10 years for the only time anyone liked duck sauce, and it wasn't even duck sauce.
Right.
Like, it was just a mistaken identity case.
Yeah.
The only way that it
so then when I finally figured out the real name of it, I was like, oh my God, now I can find it and buy it and have it anytime I want. So now I have it on my person at all times. Like I take it on bike rides. I need it.
I also love it. And one thing that I've realized in more recent years, part of why I love it is I also love gochujang, the Korean hot sauce. Yeah. And I also love Coleman's English mustard. And what all three of these sauces have in common is that they have a little bit of some type of grain in them that gives them a texture. It's not just about the flavor. These condiments or sauces, whatever you want to call them, have a unique texture that I find incredibly appealing.
Yeah, yeah. And Coleman's mustard, if you have too much of it, it will murder you. Like, you will die.
It's intense. It's intense.
You gotta be real, real delicate.
Roth, I want to talk a little bit about your perspective on food. I mean, you wrote a great piece for Food and Wine, a sort of thoughtful piece on the cultural importance of restaurants. You also seem to really like bread in a can.
Yeah, the alpha and the omega of the food experience. B&M brand products from Maine. I'm fat. So my wife is from New England, from Maine. And I mean, I just like foods that are unique to regions in general. I think it's neat. You know, like growing up in New Jersey, we had our stuff. I mean, there's like Taylor ham or whatever, and like the local products. But a lot of what I ate.
Thank you for not calling it pork roll.
Yes, I would never. I mean, yeah. I respect your listeners too much. But like, it's Italian American food is what I grew up eating mostly, you know, and it's what my parents like to cook. It's what we mostly went out to eat. And so all of these weird. Like, I remember my wife's late mom make, like, baked beans in, like, an earthen pot. A big thing that said, like, beans on it. And it was old, you know? And I'd had baked beans before, like, out of a can or whatever. But there was something about just, like, seeing that sort of preparation and that sort of care. And also those, like, weird products that you can't really get outside of upper New England. Like, the seriously brown bread in a can. It's delicious. It's just like a way to get molasses into your body more effectively than using a spoon. But it is like, you can put butter on it too at the same time. But yeah, like I love that shit. And we have made it after Kate's mom passed. Like, we've continued to sort of try to, like, around Christmas time when we're up there, just like do a baked bean dinner. And it's good. I mean, everything on the plate is a different shade of like orangish brown, which is not the most appetizing in the world. But like, for me, it's like learning a new type of cooking and eating.
Right. The piece that you wrote about restaurants, I mean, I'm sorry to make you sort of encapsulate it in a nugget, but I mean, you made a good case for the idea that restaurants and the public consciousness have changed in the past decade.
I sure think so. I mean, I think the idea that like your food comes from someplace, you know, and that you would be interested in knowing about the farm or the method in which it was grown or any of that, like, that's new since I got old. Like, that's new as in, you know, of the last 10 or 15 years, I feel like, outside of, you know, like Chez Panisse or like.
Right, outside of certain very upscale circles. I think that's well said. One more thing we got to cover before we turn to the phones. Drew, I mean, I'm sure you're really tired of talking about your big victory on Chopped, which was how many years ago?
Not tired of talking about it. Victory on Chopped.
That's long enough where, like it's new to some people.
And we should say, so you were on a competition. Your episode was a competition among amateurs. You're not a trained chef. But I watched your episode. You did very well. I mean,
goddamn,
you made
right.
Pavlova, which is something, I mean, I didn't even know what that was. But now I know that it's a meringue dessert because of you, Drew.
There's I got to tell you.
Please.
It didn't make the final cut. But when they were tasting it, Chris Santos, who's one of the judges, said he had never heard of a pavlova. So I educated the goddamn judges.
Did you practice in preparation?
I did something where, so the pavlova I made for the dessert round, I looked up a recipe prior and memorized it. I was like, well, I'm not going to make ice cream because everyone who makes ice cream is fucked. And I'm not going to make a Napoleon because everybody makes a goddamn Napoleon. So it's like, what can I make that's interesting that also has personal heritage because I was born Australian. It's an Australian dessert. So I can, you know, I can say that, even though I don't think I even had time to say it.
Right, right.
They would like it if you did that too, though. They're always like, why would you? And you have to be like, well, my mom always liked almonds.
Yeah.
So.
I totally yeah. Said it. Like my, you know, my mom made it for me because I was born in Australia. And then my mom died. My mom didn't die. But like, yeah, you know, right. I could have said that. And it would have been very, very, it would have made the show.
Well, I loved when you applied for Chopped and you posted your application answers on Deadspin. And one of the questions was, discuss some of the results and rewards of your cooking, the ways your culinary work has touched others. And you wrote, dude, you have 19 essay questions on this application. Are you shitting me? This isn't Harvard Law School. I'm not going to give you some flowery bullshit about my food touching the soul of others. I'm here to make love to your tongue. That's it.
That's all accurate. That's all correct. Yeah. I don't disavow any of that.
All right, you guys ready to go to the phones? Help some callers out?
Yeah,
let's do it.
All right, hi, who's this?
Hey, Dan, this is Eliza. I'm calling in from Portland, Oregon with my boyfriend, Connor.
All right, what can we do for you?
So Connor and I recently had an issue come to a head. I do this thing, and I don't know how long Connor's known about it, but basically when I get oil on my hands from, I don't know, roasting potatoes, eating olives, eating popcorn, if there's not a sink nearby, I'll just kind of rub it into my hands, maybe get a little bit on my forearms. And the other day we were eating popcorn in bed and we were finished with the bowl and my thighs were available. And I just kind of rubbed my hands into my thighs. And that was, it was a problem. I was banished, told to wash my hands. And now we've been discussing whether or not this is an acceptable practice.
This is just because you don't want to get up and go find something to clean your hands with.
Yeah, it's partially the convenience, but I'm also just not upset by the moisturizing components of the oil. There's lotions with oil in it, cocoa butter. So yeah, it's partially convenience, but I also appreciate my hands being a little bit more moisturized.
Does popcorn oil offer any SPF protection of any sort?
I haven't looked into that, Drew.
I'm just curious.
But I wouldn't be surprised if there's some health benefits alongside.
If it does, we're starting a new business, let me tell
you. I like
you.
It.
Yeah, this is complicated because it's like, on one hand, it sounds... I keep thinking of the most unreasonable oils possible. And you get like anchovy juice on your hands, which is impossible to do when opening, not to do when opening a can. That should not be, I think, rubbed into. It's not whatever it does for your cuticles. It's going to just make it weird for you if you're ever around cats or people. It's just a strange smell and general like essence. But like popcorn butter, like, I think if I smelled more like popcorn butter, I would just put that one in the W column and keep it moving. Like that's
a fair
solid
point. And if I can jump in really quick to clarify.
Yeah, Connor, please.
It is olive oil that was on the popcorn, not butter. We went for a lower fat, a little healthier alternative. It was home popped. So, you know, in this case, we're eating in bed, which is already like, that's a risky move.
I would just like to call out though, that was a mutually agreed upon thing to do.
That's a mutually agreed upon.
We were eating together.
Absolutely. Right. I should also point out that as much as I love Eliza, she doesn't have the best hand to mouth coordination, i.e., you know, spills fairly regularly. So
Eliza, do you concede that point?
It's an absolute issue. Okay. I mean, from as early as I can remember, so many white shirt casualties.
Okay. Yeah. Connor, go on.
So I think my visceral reaction to the oily hands going immediately to thigh skin is, you know, obviously I don't want it to rub off on our bed sheets, onto me or my clothing, because that's impossible to get out. I have no problem with you like seasoning yourself. That's very reasonable and within your rights to do so. But as soon as I get brought into the fray, I like the feeling of clean hands. And also I recognize I might have a little bit of like emotional scarring from my childhood. When my mom ever saw me wipe my hands, dirty hands on the skin, I'd get a smack upside the head. So it's sort of a triggering reaction that I have. And I recognize that.
It's a complicated thing. I don't think I understood that this would have like a Terrence Malick flashback sequence. Like we like went back to like the dinosaurs and Tree of Life right there. But I like that. I think that there's something, I mean, I know for sure that like I had similar experiences and I don't really remember a moment when I like got away from home and I was like, this is my moment. I'm just going to leave some pudding on my mouth because like, who's going to tell me to get rid of it? But there is an element of like, yeah, this is like terrible freedom to do whatever you want, but like it doesn't come without, you know, that sort of context.
Eliza or Connor, do either of you ever use your shirt or pants as a napkin in a pinch?
Never.
Never? Eliza, what about you? That's a yes.
I will say it depends on the fabric type.
That's
and
fair.
The quality of the clothing.
Right.
If it's like old denim jeans.
Great napkin.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It adds value. It breaks them in.
Yeah.
Again, not anchovy oil, but other things.
Yeah, no, jeans. Like right. That's one of the best things about jeans is that they're basically a wearable napkin.
I completely agree. And to the anchovy point, Roth, I think I would absolutely draw the line at more like what meat-based fats. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't rub schmaltz on myself or duck fat. Okay. I like the more, you know, the vegetal.
There's a difference between treating yourself like a napkin and treating yourself like a cast iron skillet. And I think that's a really important distinction to make.
How long have you two been dating?
4.5 years.
And you live together?
We live together, yeah.
Okay. And Eliza, have you met Connor's mom?
Oh, yeah.
Have you wiped your hands on yourself in front of her?
Ooh, good question. Don't.
Not intentionally. However, it's not something that I'm ashamed of, and it has become such an instinct. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it had happened.
Have you wiped your hands clean on the mother?
No.
But she's never smacked you upside the head for it.
No.
No. See, my mom's also British, so I think she has the non-confrontational thing with Eliza.
I mean, the most egregious thing that ever happened with your mom was the first Christmas I went home to. In the span of 2 days, I broke 3 champagne flutes. So I don't know. I mean, I guess.
Was it because your hands were oily?
I was trying to pick them up and clean them.
That's right.
So there's a little bit of understanding of recklessness.
All right. Am I correct that you two do not have any kids?
Correct.
If and when you do have kids together, what will you do when they wipe their hands off on themselves?
Inevitably, there would be different approaches. I think I would suggest to the child, please don't wipe your hands on your trousers. We pay for those. I would like to not replace them as regularly as I have to when you do that. Would love it if you would wash your hands. That'd be great if you would wash your hands. Okay.
I have some unfortunate news for you. That's not going to go the way you think it's going to go.
Drew is a father of 3, so he can weigh in on this as well.
I love the tone, though. That's definitely the way I would. I mean, again, don't have kids, but the idea of addressing like a rowdy 7-year-old as if they were like an unruly patron at a fancy hotel bar. That's the way to do it.
Do you actually like the feeling of spreading oil, olive oil or whatever, on your skin? Like, is there some part of you that likes it?
No, it feels great. I mean, my hands are like, they're more supple afterwards. If there's salt in the oil, seasoning in the oil, it's a little bit gritty and exfoliant. Like, it does a ton for me.
Will Connor come around to Eliza's unconventional moisturizing regimen, or will Eliza have to start using napkins? When we come back, Drew, Roth, and I give our final thoughts and deliver a verdict. Then we take another call from a woman struggling with questions of equality in marriage and in leftovers. Stick around.
And now, a delicious word from our sponsors.
If you're like me, the first thing you do when traveling is check out what's happening with the local food scene, right? And as I've been planning my big book tour and live podcast tapings all around the country, man, I am very excited to eat my way across the nation. There's Atlanta, there's Miami, and so many more. Going to local restaurants gives you a great taste of that place. And if you pay your bill with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum Amex, you get double miles at restaurants. Getting a taste of local food is the best way to get to know the local culture. And if you travel, you know that's how it's done. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Recently, I went into my closet to try to get a collared shirt out, and it occurred to me that I don't think I have bought a new collared shirt in 5 years. I mean, every shirt in there was either really old, or it had some kind of perma-stain situation, or it probably never fit right in the first place. I gotta freshen up a little bit here. It's time for something new. Right? And spring is coming. Now is the time if you've been looking to refresh your wardrobe, home, or skincare and beauty routines this season. Because you know, Walmart has genuinely surprising style finds that don't break the bank. This spring, there's only one destination for the latest fashion, home, and beauty inspired by real life. Walmart. I freshened up my wardrobe. I got some nice dress shirts, a couple light hoodies. You know, you need light hoodies for the springtime. Very useful, very comfortable. Discover surprisingly stylish new season favorites at Walmart now. Or shop it all on the Walmart app. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending. Now trending, your style at Walmart. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn best buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are so iconic that I just say Famous Amos and it's like I can taste it. Each cookie is filled with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. And the word satisfying is very key there because some cookies are crunchy and brittle, and I don't like that. But Famous Amos has a deep, tooth-sinkable, satisfying crunch that I know and love. And Famous Amos classic bite-sized chocolate chip cookies are bringing back the original recipe that everyone knows and loves. One perfect bite, everything classic in a cookie. Find Famous Amos cookies anywhere you buy your favorite snacks. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. And you know, McDonald's, it's everywhere, right? So when you start a story there, you can end up anywhere, as a couple of our recent episodes show. In last week's show, I take Janie and the kids to a very special McDonald's on Long Island. Then for the bulk of the episode, I talk with Dr. Marcia Chatelain. Her new book explores the role McDonald's has played in Black communities since its founding in the 1940s. As she says, she also has a personal connection to the chain.
I had more exposure to Black history because of McDonald's stuff than I did at school. And I went to a fancy prep school. So I had the best education, but it was McDonald's that would open up the pathway to my career. Oh, and look at me now. I'm writing these books critical of it.
That episode's up now. Get it wherever you got this one. All right, back to the show, and I'm joined now once again by the co-hosts of the Distraction Podcast and two of the co-founders of Defector Media, David Roth and Drew McGarry. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Hey,
let's do it.
We're also joined once again by Eliza and her boyfriend, Connor. When Eliza gets certain oils on her hands, like olive oil, she likes to wipe it off on her arms and legs. Connor says, look, do what you want, just don't do it in a way that's likely to ruin our bed sheets or get oil on me. Drew and Roth, I want to hear from you. Your final thoughts on this situation. Roth, you first.
I mean, to me, this seems like something that sounds incredibly objectionable just because I had never thought of it. And then the more I hear the argument for what the thing actually is on its merits, the more I'm like, oh, that's actually secretly been normal all along. The only real objection to this is, you know, what it does to the furniture or the broader setting of it. But as a personal decision, it seems way more valid than I was initially prepared to allow.
Okay, Drew.
I oddly will go the other way because as someone who will do somewhat slob adjacent things such as that, I have a thing where, I've been married almost 20 years and it's like, you know, if my wife criticizes me, it'll be a thing where it's like, well, this is just something I've always done. This is me. And, you know, the thought is, well, you know, Drew, you can change some things about yourself. It's all right. So it's a thing where it's like you keep it in mind and you sort of start new habits and you realize that you're okay with the new habits and you can give it a shot and see if it works. And then maybe it won't work. And then you end up, I do have to be the greasy thigh lady. And that's just the way it's going to have to be. And you're going to have to deal with it. But you it's all about listening and then trying. So there you go.
Connor, you would ask us to tell Eliza not to do this anymore. Is that what you're hoping for?
I want to say this. I love you the way that you are. Oh. I don't want you to change your behavior for me, except for sometimes. And so I guess all I would ask is that you be cognizant of when we're eating in bed, you think ahead, maybe bring a napkin upstairs or a wet one and, you know, take care of the business up there rather than, you know,
right,
knowingly wipe your hands on yourself or me. Mm. Yeah.
Eliza, is there something annoying that Connor does that you could make him stop doing in exchange?
A trade.
A trade of pet peeves.
Well, he embezzles, wow. So you can't do that.
Yeah, there's one thing. We haven't discussed this yet. But you got a pretty small kitchen, so things need to be where they are meant to be if they're not in use. And Connor makes a lot of toast and literally never puts the toaster back in its little zone. So it's always on the counter and then I got to put it back. I'm not willing to completely give up the oiling hands though. Like I would say, okay, not in bed. If you could put the toaster away, like that's absolutely something I would agree to.
I will gladly trade you putting the toaster back in its little cubby for no in bed hands wiping on skin.
Dan, does it always work out this well?
Yeah, we should.
Is this reasonable?
Yeah, what? We shouldn't. We didn't even need to be here. They figured it out.
Yeah, seriously, bang the gavel, man. Seems like we solved the shit.
This is the most contentious argument we've ever had.
Right, but if I can give you a little bit of advice, that's sort of like just raw bartering that you just engage in, Eliza and Connor. Like that's the secret to a successful relationship. You know, you got to be thinking like, all right, you want me to give this up? What can we trade? Let's trade. And now the toaster is going to be where you want it to be, Eliza.
I know, this is awesome. I've been thinking about how to bring it up for a while. So I do thank you for allowing us to mediate that.
Turned out going on a food podcast was all you had to do.
All right. Well, Eliza and Connor, thank you so much. Good luck with the next bowl of popcorn and batch of toast.
Thanks,
Dan. It was a pleasure.
You guys ready to take another call?
Yeah, man.
Why not?
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Natalie calling from Novato, California.
All right, Natalie, what can we do for you?
So I have, it's more of an internal battle, but we'll bring my husband in eventually. He is the cook of the family, which is great. What happened when we first moved in together, when we were first dating, was that he would cook the meal and he would serve himself and then me the exact same amount. And because it was delicious, I ate it all the time. But that was not great for me. It was too much for my belly. So if he serves himself his amount of food and I get served less, am I entitled to half of the meal or at least equal to what he is eating? You know, for instance, we sit down to a casserole of lasagna. Should I cut it in half? He gets his half. I get my half. I can eat it when and how I want. He can eat it when and how he wants.
And so your question basically is, should you be getting an equal amount of food as him or should you be getting less?
Yes. We split expenses. We input nearly the same amount of income. Like we pay for the food the same. I should be able to eat what I want at dinner time, but should also be entitled to leftovers as well, equally. So now we also have kids. We have a 3.5-year-old and a 7-month-old. So they're also factored into it. How much do they get? Obviously, they get much, much less.
Josh, let's bring you in. I know you've been listening. When did this issue first present itself to you? When did Natalie first tell you about it?
I feel like it was a few years ago. She mentioned something about it, about her kind of stress around, you know, not taking as much of a meal at that moment, but I would kind of keep plowing ahead at dinner time and her feeling like she was kind of getting the short end of the stick.
It seems to me that Natalie, the question is your fair share 50% in this case, or is your fair share one meal's worth, whatever that is for you as an individual person? And the amount of food that is one meal's worth varies from one person to the next based on a wide range of factors.
Correct. I agree.
And so if Josh made twice as much lasagna, would you still want 50% or would you then be happy with 25%? Is it about having half or it's about just having enough for you to be able to keep eating it because it's yummy?
For me, it's about getting half.
Really? So even if half is two lunch portions as opposed to the one, you feel like you've put in the work, you've paid the cost to enjoy a boss-sized portion of lasagna?
Correct.
Okay. I sort of understand that, but I also feel like this is one of those areas where it seems like there's room to get to yes, if I may use a sports blogger / podcaster term on this one. Basically, if you want a leftover amount to like cover a meal in the middle of the day, for instance, then maybe the size of that meal matters less than the fact that it qualifies as one unit of Natalie food.
Yeah, I do often ask him when he takes a bite of my food to take a Natalie-sized bite versus a Josh-sized bite.
So you've begun exploring the relativistic space of like eating and portioning. So it seems like there's possibly some traction there.
And just to be clear, like I'm mostly fine with you know, with her wanting to claim 50% of whatever it is. I don't really have a problem with that. I've been thinking a lot about it over the past 48 hours of like trying to come up with, you know, the different arguments in favor of what would entitle me to 50% plus or whatever. And, you know, one of them being that I do most of the cooking. So does that mean that I should get a little bit more? Or, you know, the fact that Natalie is way more of a snacker than I am. So relatively more of my caloric intake happens at meals. So should that entitle me to, you know, a little bit more than 50%? But I feel like with me, the biggest issue that this brings up is kind of more on the, I don't know, sociological front. And it's like, when we're kind of dividing it up evenly or trying to divide it up evenly, it kind of brings to the table sort of a atmosphere of competition and uncertainty. And I feel like Mr. Ross was getting into this a little bit earlier, and it's like, that kind of goes against what I would like the family meal to be, which is kind of a relaxed sharing of food.
Is there ever a scenario where, Josh, you cook dinner, you each get your respective portions for dinner, Natalie's being less, and then there's only a small amount of the thing left, and there's a choice where either Josh can have seconds and Josh is still hungry, or Natalie can have that piece wrapped up to eat as leftovers later? Are you ever in that exact situation?
Sure, that's pretty common, yeah.
But we wouldn't say those are Natalie's leftovers. They would just be wrapped up, and then there would be an unspoken who gets the leftovers.
Well, that's what you need to write on it with a fucking Sharpie, you know. Hey, this is mine. Otherwise it's going to stay there, and it's just going to be like this passive-aggressive talisman that you're both going to have imaginary arguments about before you've even argued about it.
Drew and Roth, what do you guys think about this situation?
And this is a tough one for me. I feel like it can be done as long as everybody's just sort of on the same page and talking. They're just boring, annoying conversations. I mean, like, I wish I could give you, like, a funnier answer, but at some point you're going to have to just, like, sit down and freaking hash it out about the grain salad that you made and how that's going to be divided out over the course of the rest of your week. But it's definitely better than, like, getting secretly, seethingly mad at 2 p.m. when you realize your lunch isn't there. Like, I think you got to prioritize one bad experience over the other.
Drew?
I think if you're either openly or silently wringing your hands over the, you know, exact equality between things that are in the house, I think I think you should just let that go. Like, I don't think it's healthy. The other thing is that you have 2 kids. I have 3 kids. I have to, you know, their intake of things is never equal, because if I buy something from the store, it's just fucking gone. And you have to do accept at some point that things are not going to be ever perfectly divided and equal. So what you can do is Josh can be cognizant of making sure that there is enough of what Natalie wants when she wants it, of the food, and that Natalie can be conscious of the fact that she has a big hungry husband who's going to want the big piece of chicken once in a while, and you meet there. But I think if you're obsessing over, you know, the exactness of the proportions of who gets what, I don't think that that's good.
I hear you, Natalie, because I see in you someone who just, you're an eater and you love food. That is what I'm getting from you. And when someone cooks something really, really delicious, you don't, like, you want as much of it as you can have. And if you can't fit it all in your belly in the first sitting, it's not fair that someone else should get more. That being said, to ask Josh, like, not to sit there at the table and not eat the delicious food that he just prepared when he's still hungry, and it's the food's right there, so that you can have some tomorrow, also feels like a big ask. Like, leftovers are supposed to be the things that nobody finished. I think the most obvious solution here is Josh just needs to cook more food at once. So Josh, cook more food, but Natalie, let go of the 50-50 concern. Like, you know, you'll get yours, you'll eat a good meal, you'll get some leftovers, you know, it will even out in the end.
I do think there's just something really delightfully calling into a food podcast about this whole thing ending up like, you know, a sensitive conversation about relationships, but then at the end, they're like, you just got to make more noodles, man. You got to do a box and a half.
Well, also, the other thing is that maybe Natalie, in the interest of balance, Natalie should be allowed to ask this question to 3 female podcasters.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, she's, you know, there's 3 beefy lads she's talking to. So it's like,
yeah.
Do you think that's part of the dynamic here, Natalie? Like, being the woman in the relationship, is there like an equality issue here that is also important to you?
I think only momentarily, because I'm also technically feeding our 7 and a half, 7 month old through nursing. So I do need more food right now because I am providing nutrition to one of our children directly. But generally outside of that time frame, no.
Okay.
I'll share a bit of wisdom that I remember from a deli menu at the Kosher Nosh in Waldwick, New Jersey, near where I grew up.
I love the Kosher Nosh.
You know the Kosher Nosh?
Of course, it's not in Waldwick, Kosher then. Nosh, yes.
So do you remember they had a special where you could get 1.5 sandwiches, which was a weird thing that I've never seen at a deli before. And the way they had a little rhyme for it, and it said, 1 not enough, 2 too many, try 1.5. And you won't leave any.
Ah, very wise. So, Josh, buy yourself a half a lasagna pan to supplement your full lasagna
simple
pan.
Simple as that.
And all your problems will be solved.
Good luck, guys.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, David Roth, Drew McGarry, this was a blast. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Of course, anytime.
That's Drew McGarry and David Roth. You can find their writing at defector.com. That's the subscription website they co-founded. And you definitely got to check out their podcast, The Distraction. If you want smart and funny sports talk with a lot of very entertaining tangents and opinions, including many about food, listen to The Distraction. We'll also link to their social media profiles and more of their work, including Drew's books and his writing for SF Gate and Roth's Hallmark podcast, all at sporkful.com. Next week on the show, we take a close look at something you probably use all the time, but don't think a lot about: your stove. Well, it turns out the gas stove is in the middle of a huge fight between cities and utility companies, and the future of natural gas may be on the line. We'll tell you all about it next week. In the meantime, make sure you check out our last two episodes featuring three different stories about McDonald's. If you listen in Apple Podcasts, subscribe. In Stitcher and Spotify, favorite. That way you'll never miss an episode. Thanks. This show is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andre Sohero.
Our editor is
Tracy Samuelson.
The show is mixed by
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Zane Rahim in Ypsilanti, Michigan, reminding you to eat more, eat better, eat more better.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.